from San Francisco, California, with your host, Ben Kaspic. This is Locked On Giants Baseball. Welcome back to Locked On Giants Baseball, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. My name is Ben Kaspic, and I'm thrilled to be with you again today. On this show, we provide daily episodes, Monday through Friday, approximately 15 minutes in length, talking about the San Francisco Giants in a way that's data-driven and rational, but also insightful and easily digestible, easy for everyone to understand. To get this show every day, you need to hit that subscribe button. You can find us on the brand new podcast app Himalaya or Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify. Then you can get in your car and tell your smart device to play podcast Locked On Giants Baseball. Today's show is brought to you in part by Hotels.com. Don't hate like your friend's trip. Book your own with Hotels.com and get rewarded basically everywhere. Hotels.com. Be there, do that, get rewarded. Coming up on today's show, we're going to talk about the Giants' 6-5 comeback win over the Padres. Tyler Beede with another strong outing, and I say another, it's really like the second he's ever had, but a huge step in the right direction for him, even though he unraveled a little bit as his outing went on. And we're going to talk about some other really noteworthy things as it pertains to this game and the Giants moving forward in this retooling, rebuilding season. But first, their record. With the win, the Giants improved to 27-38. The Dodgers lost, so the Giants gained a game in the National League West and improved to 16.5 games back. I say that kind of in jest because I have declared the division over, and I would still say that 16.5 still not looking too good for the Giants. Their run differential fell to minus 85, which is one run better than the worst run differential in the National League, which belongs to the Pirates. The Giants are still just 12-20 at home, so that's really been their biggest undoing this season, is not playing well at home. Prior to the game, I was a little bit surprised to see that Kevin Pillar was not in the lineup, not because I think he deserves to be in the lineup, but because he's been run out there every single day, no matter what, pretty much since he was acquired. Yes, he's had off days every now and then, but the thing is, there was a day off on Monday. Nobody played for the Giants on Monday, and then Tuesday's game, Kevin Pillar was not in there. So it's very unusual to see a regular sitting on the bench the day after a team off day. So I was very originally wondering, did he get hurt? Did I miss something with him? But no, he was just not in the starting lineup with Tyler Austin in left and Mike Yastrzemski in right. Even though there was a right-handed pitcher on the mound, it was surprising. The surprising move was that Tyler Austin was in there in left against a righty. Normally what we've seen is Yastrzemski in left against a righty and Pillar in right with Duggar in center. Now, we've been saying on the show for a long time that Kevin Pillar has just not been getting it done production-wise. Outside the zone, swing rate is through the roof, highest in MLB by a wide margin, up close to 50%. And then his in-the-zone swing rate is not up close to the top of MLB, so he's super aggressive only at pitches outside of the strike zone. But I didn't realize it had gotten this bad, where if you're looking at Fangraph's wins above replacement, he is third last in all of MLB at minus 0.8. Only Starlin Castro and Yonder Alonso have been less valuable, and it's a very marginal difference. Yonder Alonso is also at minus 0.8, and Starlin Castro is at minus 0.9. And in terms of park-adjusted offensive production, Kevin Pillar's 50 weighted runs created plus is dead last in the National League and second last in MLB, ahead of only Rougned Odor. We're talking about a sample of 250 plate appearances for Pillar, so not exactly a tiny sample, and playing like one of the worst players in MLB. So yeah, it's just how much longer could they tolerate it? And hopefully, you know, hate to, again, root against a guy, but he's someone who's eligible for arbitration one more time in the offseason, and the Giants have a choice whether or not to tender him a contract. And so based on the way he's playing, I would imagine that there's very little chance that they will tender him a contract, which would be worth over $5 million, which is his salary this season, approximately. So if he's likely not going to be a part of next year's team, then what is really the point of having him start every single day when the production has been so bad? So last night, finally, we got our first glimpse of the Giants going in another direction. Tyler Austin made the start, and he actually did have a big hit in this game. Brandon Belt was out of the lineup again. This time he has a little bit of a neck issue, but he was fine to pinch hit, so hopefully he'll be back in there tonight. Tyler Beede on the mound, Fernando Tatis Jr., very, very talented young player at the plate in the first inning, and he hits a home run on the first pitch of the game. It was 85 degrees at first pitch in San Francisco, which is just absurd. Hopefully this heat wave goes away. It's been crazy here in the Bay Area. So it looked like it was going to be potentially a rough night for Tyler Beede after that one pitch homer, but he very much settled in, and at one point he retired 11 straight with 7 outs coming on strikeouts. His fastball in the game averaged 94.6 miles an hour and topped out at 96.1. So the stuff was there, and he really did settle in and was flipping over a curveball. He even threw a slider in this game, which we were told that he's not going to throw that anymore, but he did throw a couple of sliders. In the third inning, with runners on the corners and one out, Mike Yastrzemski popped out. So his rough little stretch continues, and I do think that it would make sense sooner rather than later to give Alex Dickerson a shot. I do think probably more likely to have success than Mike Yastrzemski. And the beautiful thing is you can just option Mike Yastrzemski and hope he figures some things out, and you can always bring him back. So you're not going to lose him by optioning him. And Dickerson has had that success in a similar role to what Yastrzemski is trying to fill. And they're actually not that different in age. Yastrzemski is like 28 and Dickerson is only 29. But right before Yastrzemski had that pop out with runners on the corners and one out, Joe Panik had lined a single to left field with Steven Duggar on second base, and Ron Wotus held him at third. So there's a chance, you know, it was hit right at the left fielder, but you know how I feel about aggressively sending runners home. And Yastrzemski popping out proves that it's really easier said than done that they're going to get that guy in from third with less than two outs. So when you have the opportunity, you might want to send them. And this definitely came into play later in the game when there was a very aggressive send. In the bottom of the fourth, Sandoval hit a single, and Stephen Vogt hit one down the line, and Sandoval went to third, and Vogt tried to extend it to a double, and he was thrown out by Hunter Renfroe, who has one of the best arms in MLB. I can't really fault the aggressiveness of Vogt there. It looked like it should have been a double, but Hunter Renfroe has a great arm, and to me, the aggressive base running is all about trying to score a run, not to stretch a single into a double. Yes, it's nice to stretch a single into a double, but you can't get thrown out there with no outs, and Sandoval advancing to third. So then Sandoval's at third with one out, and Brandon Crawford hit a weak tapper back to the pitcher, Chris Paddock. So now Sandoval's at third with two outs, and it's looking like they're going to not score again despite getting multiple hits in an inning with runners on base. But then Tyler Austin against a righty hit a missile single to left field that was a huge breakthrough for the Giants. He needed that, and the team needed that. It was a big hit for both him personally and the team. The ball was hit 109 miles an hour, so it was absolutely scorched. And then right after that, Steven Duggar hit a home run into right center field. The ball was jumping. That is not normally a home run on a cold, windy night in San Francisco. I mean, he hit it well, but normally the ballpark eats those up. So the Giants took a 3-1 lead at that point. Then in the top of the fifth, this is where Tyler Beede started to unravel a little bit after that dominant stretch after a rough start. He walked the leadoff batter Will Myers on a 3-2 pitch. He then got Austin Hedges to fly out to center field, but then Will Myers stole second base, and then Chris Paddock hit an infield single to put runners on first and third. Fernando Tatis Jr. then hit a ground ball to Joe Panik, who made a diving play, tried to flip it to Crawford. Crawford wasn't there. The ball trickled away. Will Myers scored, Paddock to second. So now it's starting to unravel for Beede. He does get Josh Naylor to ground out. It was a tremendous diving play by Sandoval that saved two runs, Sandoval playing first base in the absence of Belt. So Sandoval has continued to play very well, hit right-handed pitching, and just provide value for the Giants, which I did not see coming after the very rough last several seasons. So then there was a long battle with Manny Machado, full count, two outs, runners on second and third, base open, but Beede definitely wanted to get through Machado there, threw I think 12 pitches and eventually walked him, only his second walk of the night for Beede. But it was quite a battle, and then they took him out. Trevor Gott came in, and there was another infield hit. It was like a comebacker to Gott. He tried to backhand the ball. It took his glove off. He went down to pick it up, tried to throw to first while he's falling backwards, so the throw had nothing behind it. And then there was a really aggressive move by Fernando Tatis Jr. to score from second base. Just exciting base running by Tatis there. So just like that, the Padres took back the lead. And so those runs technically go to Tyler Beede, but really he pitched a lot better than four runs in 4 2/3. This is kind of a lost season, wins and losses wise, for the Giants. So it's really not about the score and the fact that Beede, those runs go to Beede. You're just really looking for signs of optimism and things to be optimistic and to project forward and to be excited about. And I think Beede definitely showed us that. So forget about those runs scoring. Imagine they hadn't. And it was a really nice outing for Beedy and one that he can build upon in his next start. Remember, to get this show every single day, please consider hitting that subscribe button. You can find us on the brand new podcast app Himalaya or Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify. Coming up in the next half of the show, we're going to continue to talk about this game. The Giants were trailing at the time, and they came back to win in very exciting fashion, so you're not going to want to miss that. But first... okay, so as promised, we'll continue to talk about this Giants come-from-behind win against the Padres. Giants were trailing 4-3. Mark Melancon came on in the 7th after Trevor Gott pitched well and finished out the 6th. So 1 1/3 strong innings for Gott. He continues to be a very bright spot. Good pickup for Farhan Zaidi and the Giants. Mark Melancon looked really sharp in the top of the 7th. Curveball was snapping, getting guys to chase, spotting his cutter. So a scoreless 7th for Melancon, and then the bottom of the 7th was where it really all came together for the Giants. Brandon Belt pinch hit off the bench to lead off the inning against a right-handed reliever, and he drew a walk, took a borderline low breaking ball for ball 4. But a lot of guys, especially on the Giants, talking Kevin Pillar, Evan Longoria, they hack at that pitch no matter what. But Belt with his good eye, I mean, it's super valuable to have a good eye. And so the idea that he, you know, that somehow walks are not a good thing is just absolutely crazy. It's just as good as getting a single in that situation. So Belt with the walk, he's been on fire lately, getting on base, hitting for power when he does put the ball in play. Walk rate on the season up to 15%. It fell down to 10.7% last year, but it was up around 15% the 2 years prior. So 15% is a very strong walk rate. So Belt is only having a 247 average, but he has a 369 on base percentage. So very valuable offense right now from Brandon Belt. His run tied the game, so drawing that walk there was huge. Joe Panik then hit an opposite field single, and Brandon Belt took third base, and I like the determination to take third there. He could have just laid up at second base, but he had it in his mind that he was going to get to third, and he did make it safely. The next batter was Mike Yastrzemski, again with an opportunity to drive in a runner from third with less than two outs. And the first pitch was down around his ankles, and it was called a strike. The catcher's glove literally touched the dirt as he caught the ball, and it wasn't a breaking ball, it was a fastball. He then swung over the top of the next pitch, which was also low, but he kind of had to swing at it because it was liable to be called a strike based on the first pitch, so he was not happy. The Giants dugout was not happy at that point. The umpire pretty much put him in an 0-2 hole. He then hit a missile to right field, just absolutely scorched a ball to right field, but it was right at Hunter Renfroe, who was charging in as he made the catch. So I don't blame Brandon Belt at all, who's not very fast, for not trying to score there. With no outs, Hunter Renfroe, who's already thrown a guy out in this game, charging in on the ball with the strong arm that he has, I think it was the right move not to go by Belt. So Yastrzemski couldn't get it done again, but it was a good at bat. I mean, the umpire put him in an 0-2 hole, and then he scorched the ball to right. So not gonna knock him for not getting that run in. It was then up to Evan Longoria, who came up with the biggest hit of the game. He hit a missile double down the left field line, just out of the reach of Will Myers in left. Belt scored easily from third, obviously. But then Ron Wotus sent Joe Panik aggressively from all the way from first. And with one out, the odds you need to try to send that guy home aren't as low as they would be with two outs. But there's still, you still, even if he's going to get thrown out, like, I don't remember the exact odds, but less than you would think, you send the guy aggressively, and so I like the send by Wotus. Once again, the throw was offline, as they often are. Short hopped the catcher, as they often do. Hard to make an accurate throw from 150 plus feet away. So the throw short hops the catcher, bounces away, and Panik scores, and the Giants took the lead. Evan Longoria made it to third on the throw. Sandoval then hit a missile sac fly to center field. That ball was absolutely roasted. It was hit like 112 miles an hour, probably the hardest hit ball of the night. It was a 2-0 pitch, so good for him just sitting on a fat pitch and smoking it into center field, and the Giants took a 6-4 lead, which they would need that two-run lead, because Tony Watson allowed a home run in the top of the 8th. So his struggles this season kind of continue. And I just think at some point, Bruce Bochy's going to have to just stop automatically going to Tony Watson in the 8th inning, regardless of who's up. A bunch of righties were up in that 8th inning. It was Renfroe came up, and he just kills lefties. And the home run was hit by Ian Kinsler, who I'm sure is also better against lefties than righties. So I get it. Last year, Watson was really, really good, but this year has not been the same for him. Strikeout rate is down like 10 percentage points. He's still really doing well at limiting walks, but he's allowing a lot more home runs. He's already allowed 4 home runs this year. He allowed 4 all of last year in 66 innings. He's only thrown 25 this year. So I think, you know, mixing and matching a little bit in the eighth might be a better move moving forward. I like Sam Dyson potentially in that seventh. He's having, or in that eighth inning, he's having a very strong season. If it's a bunch of righties due up, I think you can make a strong case that Maranta, Dyson, even Melanson might be a better option right now than Tony Watson, who's just really struggling to limit hard contact. And then in the top of the ninth, Will Smith came in and got two strikeouts in a perfect ninth, which we say over and over with him. Same story every single game. The ninth inning is essentially boring when Will Smith is on the mound. The Giants are going to miss him when he goes because he really should be traded and probably will be traded. But he's a phenomenal relief pitcher, one of the best in MLB. And it's really a shame that they didn't use him more in 2016 when their bullpen was collapsing down the stretch and in the postseason, ultimately eliminating them from the postseason when they blew a three-run ninth inning lead against the Cubs. They had Will Smith on that team and did not use him in high leverage innings. Coming up tonight, the Giants will take on the Padres in game two of the two-game series. Joey Lucchesi on the mound for the Padres, Sean Anderson on the mound for the Giants. The Giants will then have another off day, which is good for them, off day at home. Then they take on the Brewers over the weekend. We will be back with another episode tomorrow talking about tonight's game against the Padres. If you like this show and want to hear it every single day, please consider hitting that subscribe button. You can find us on the brand new podcast app Himalaya, as well as Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify. Himalaya is free, super easy to use, and has every single podcast you love or are searching for. They have personally curated playlists made just for you by their expert podcast tastemakers. Themed collections of shows to help with podcast discovery. You can find everything from comedy to mystery, thrillers, and sports. Listeners can follow their favorite shows and creators, like and comment on individual episodes, and build podcast playlists by the episode. Customize it just like a playlist for songs and share it through social, text, and email. Find and download Himalaya on the App Store or Google Play Store, and don't forget to follow Locked On Giants Baseball when you're there. Once again, my name is Ben Kasbick. You can follow me on Twitter at @Cove_cast. Please consider rating and leaving a review. I do see all of your reviews. I've seen a couple people who've made comments about wanting to get this show more interactive, and that is something that is in the works. So please bear with us as we set up an account for people to be able to call in and leave comments that we will read or play on the air. So that is coming. Guests are definitely a distinct possibility moving forward. We just have to work through some things before we get that set up. I cannot wait to be with you again tomorrow, and until then, we'll see you next time.